Today, our topic is, what can you do if a friend of yours has mental health issues? Now, Lauren, we've got some really nice guests on the show today. Would you like to tell us a bit about them?
Well, our first guest is Lawrence Thompson, who's the welfare rep here at LUU, which means he is in charge of representing the views and the voices of all the welfare societies, including Mind Matters. And he's also the president of Mind Matters. So a very knowledgeable man on this topic.
Yeah, he's going to be able to help us out loads, I imagine.
Yeah, and we've also got the lovely Gareth Field, who is a member of Mind Matters, and is also going to be talking to us a little bit today about personal experiences of today's topic, which is supporting friends with mental health problems.
So this is a topic that is actually quite important to a lot of people, because mental health, as we found out this semester, affects loads of students in Leeds, but also it affects them not only personally in terms of what's happening inside, but also those around you. You can have loads of, I don't know, friends, family members, other loved ones that may come into contact with these kinds of issues, and we want to make sure that we're giving you the best advice possible and help you out a little bit along the way. But first up, it's time for our news feature. So we've got lots of things that are exciting and that are happening in Leeds and also nationally this week. And one thing that Lauren laughed that I put this on the list, because she was like, Lissy, I hate to tell you, but it was actually last week. But I did just want to give a bit of a shout out to the guys at Leeds College of Music. Now, obviously, their main number one priority is music, but they did an event called Take a Night Off last week. And it was basically raising awareness for mental health and also the Leeds Mind. And the great thing is they were using music to try and help kind of overcome the stigma. And it was run by a lovely friend of mine called Callum Sweet. So and he said it went really well.
Oh,
and
great.
They actually had a really nice acoustic set and everybody was sitting down and just having a really cool time. And it was just basically a way to take a night off and stop thinking about all the different things that we come into contact with being a student and listen to some cool music.
And so great that they were raising money for Leeds Mind as well, because we were just looking at the Mind website because it has fantastic resources on it. And we were just talking about how much money it must take to put all of that information together and have it out there. So raising money for Mind is something I'm always in favour of.
Totally. In fact, at LSR, we've just been revamping our website and it's not a cheap endeavour. So looking at the Mind website, like, it's really useful, really easy to use. And I imagine like all the fundraising that must have had to go on to ensure that this website is not only, you know, knowledgeable and have loads of information, but it's actually really easy for people to access if they ever have questions to us. So yay Leeds College of Music, yay Callum Sweet, yay Take a Night Off, and yay Leeds Mind. But yeah, our next news story, Lauren, do you want to give us a whirl?
Yeah, so the next news story is that on the 21st of March, here on campus in the Stanley and Audrey Burton Gallery, at 1:30, is a talk about changing ideas of mental health in the 21st century, particularly the early 21st century around the time of the world wars. And this is really interesting to me because I'm a historian and I love mental health and I love a bit of the world wars. So
oh my god, it's perfect.
It's ideal for me, but it's suitable for kids as well. And it's looking at kind of the way that people's ideas around mental health changed and the way that people's ideas around objects related to mental health changed, which sounds very cryptic according to the description, but also sounds like it could be super interesting. And you can sign up to that via the Leeds Uni website if you go to the section that tells you what's coming up in the Stanley and Audrey Burton Gallery. I hope I'm saying that right. I think that's the name of the gallery.
No, you are right. And that's the one that's in the Parkinson building, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it is.
So if you go into Parkinson Court, just on your left-hand side, that's where the gallery is. So yeah, 1:30 on the 21st of March. And our final news story is the fact that Mind Matters, the society that Lauren proudly represents every week on Brainwave, it's their AGM on Thursday. Now, last week we spoke quite a lot about AGMs, what happens when you go for a committee position, not only how fantastic it can be in terms of the social aspects on your CV, but also the skills you learn. And actually, sometimes it can be quite hard to go for AGMs and put yourself forward in that kind of capacity. But we want loads of you to put yourselves forward, as the Mind Matters AGM is this coming Thursday. And it's also it's a great way of becoming an even better part of the society, an even bigger part of the society from September onwards. Or does your committee change now?
Our committee change. So the handover is kind of over Easter and after Easter, so that the new committee gets involved just before we break up and has a chance to try everything, and then they start in full in September. And so you can get involved in fundraising, you can get involved in campaigning, you can get involved in the welfare side of stuff, which is what I do. There's so many different things, or you can just come along and get free pizza at the AGM. There's many, many ways to get involved.
I mean, really, why not?
Why not? Why not get free pizza? Unless you're me, because I'm allergic to cheese.
And never eats pizza ever. Now, quick question. We will have listeners who aren't part of the My Matter Society. Do you have to be a member to go for a committee position?
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
right.
I think yes, but I also think that our membership isn't expensive. so if you're considering running, get in touch with us either via our Facebook group or via a Facebook message, and we can talk to you a bit more about what the positions involves and everything. So if you were interested, you could buy membership and
Great.
You could come and stand.
Put yourself forward. Mm-hmm. Lovely. Okay, so we're going to be having lots on the rest of this Brainwave edition. We're going to be having our agony aunt section later on in the show, so if you actually would like to get your questions answered by the lovely Lauren and also our special guests Lawrence and Gareth, then please send us a tweet at ThisIsLSR and we'll be happy to answer your questions.
You're listening to Brainwave on Leeds Student Radio.
And now it's a lovely pleasure to introduce our two guests this week. We have Gareth, who's a member of My Matters Society. Hello, Gareth.
Hiya.
And we also have Lawrence, who is our welfare rep here at LUU. Hi, Lawrence.
Hi.
Welcome to the studio. Lawrence was actually co-presenter a couple of weeks ago, so this is not even new for him. He's just an old hat at this Brainwave situation. So I guess it's time to get our ball rolling. Let's get the discussion going. Lauren, if you will.
Yeah, so as we mentioned before, what we're talking about this week is supporting friends who are going through a difficult time or are experiencing poor mental health. So guys, have you ever been in a situation where you've had to help someone who's been struggling? Would you like to tell us a little bit about that?
So for me, it was... So there have been two big situations in my life. The first one was during school in sixth form, where I had to support someone through... I supported someone through quite a severe eating disorder. And then in first year, there was one of my sort of housemates that sort of you all come together. And then someone undergoing pretty severe psychosis. And so that was pretty... difficult, because on the first point didn't know anything about either of those two, didn't feel equipped sort of emotionally to deal with that. Lauren has worked on me all year. I am more emotionally sensitive thanks to Lauren, but I'm much more appreciative of hugs and things like that now. But that wasn't then, and it did take a toll. And I think it's hard because you want to fix it. You want to fix it straight away. And I don't know whether that's just because that's my approach to life. Like, mm-hmm. just got to get in there, do everything right, and you'll get the right result. But that's not how it works.
I think sometimes it is difficult to accept that it's a long journey and that you can't... You might be part of the journey to wellness, but you are not going to be the solution.
Yeah.
Have you had a similar experience, Gareth?
Yes. I had a friend who was suffering from bipolar disorder and... kind of used drinking to kind of cope with that, and I think the issue that I had there was that it was often when I was around them, and it often led to, like, when I first realized that it wasn't just getting drunk, it was a bit of a shock. It wasn't something that I'd experienced before, but again, you know, that's we got there.
And what did both of you find to be the best way that you could support your friend? Was it through offering them mental health advice, or was it just through being there for them and having their back, or a combination, or neither?
I know it's hard. It's a hard question to answer, because at the time you're sort of throwing so many things and just seeing what sticks. But I think sort of my lasting impression was that I didn't particularly help that well. Because, and that's hard for me to say now, it was even harder to accept then, but it was just, it's the idea that actually, so you said about the journey, I may have been the first part of that first stage of the journey, but for me, for both of those situations, the support wasn't available because they didn't want support. And naturally, you can't take the decision for someone to take their to take them to a hospital, to take them anywhere else. You can't breach confidentiality by telling someone, say their family or anything like that, to say, oh, actually, this is what's going on. And there's been so, and there's so many times where, so with mental health, because people keep it secret, you don't know whether to breach that secret. And I have no answer on that question. I have no answer whether you should tell people or not, because actually it's up to you on that decision. I decided to keep it secret because I wanted to keep that trust in that relationship. But if they don't want to seek support, it's sometimes really hard to say. You can insist on it as a friend, but you can't literally hold their hand to the door, because when they get into the room, what then? And then what after that?
It's interesting that you say break confidentiality, because that's something that we talk about a lot in Mind Matters when we provide welfare, but that's because it's in a more formal setting and we've had training. And I wonder if it does apply those same kind of rules when it's friendship. If a friend is struggling, are you as a friend under obligation to not tell anyone else? I would argue possibly not. If in a friend situation, if they'd come to you for support and you're bound by confidentiality, I don't know. I find that interesting. What do you think, Aris?
I think it's trying to find the fine line between like just listening to them and listening to what they want, but also being quite firm and being like, no, this needs to happen. Because within the friendship kind of setting, it is like they have to know, and you have to know that you're not doing it to be, you're trying to help them, and that's, you're only trying to be there to support them. Even if that means making quite hard decisions.
And do you find that it can be a bit of an uphill battle? Have you had some arguments with friends? Because I think it's difficult from an outsider's perspective to what to you may be an obvious solution, but just as you said, Lawrence, you can't force someone. Did you find any way around this, or...?
No.
I wish
I had a more hopeful story in the end. I think in the end you can hope that rationality, and you can hope that argument that you keep making often enough, that you say it, and then it's enough that you've said it. It's enough that you've been there for them. So one of the things we talked about before this show was, what are the main lessons for it? And actually being there for someone, educating yourself on what's going on, educating yourself on what help is available so that you can let them know, and actually just practicing self-preservation and self-kindness. And that's that final one, the hardest one I found. The other ones, googling all the different things, easy. But actually practicing that self-preservation, that kindness, and being there for them as at the same time that they're rejecting your help is hard. But sometimes you just have to be there in that moment and do that and be there for them, because then that's what they'll remember when they get into a more recovery mindset.
I think that's really interesting what you say, that being there for them even when they're rejecting you because they're so ill. I think it can be really, really valuable to remember why you're friends with someone. You're not just caring for someone, you're friends with them because they make the best jokes during Corrie. So watch Corrie and just remind yourself. Do you know what I mean? Do you think that's true, Gareth?
I think, it's important to know that nothing that is happening is to be taken personally. It's not necessarily their fault, and you've just got to be able to kind of get through it, and you've got to be able to persevere and know that your friendship started before that, and that friendship should still exist, and there's a reason that you are friends.
Definitely. And I think it's really valid as well, Lawrence, what you said about just having some services in mind that you can point to if needed, having knowledge so that you don't feel like you're out there alone. But maybe we should go to a song, and then when we get back from the song, we'll talk a little bit more about looking after yourself, which you touched on, which I think is the main thing.
You're back with Brainwave. We have Lawrence and Gareth in the studio with us today. And also, as usual, your presenters, Lissy and Lauren, here to talk about how to support yourself, but also friends through difficult times. And we've all been through these kind of difficult times, especially supporting other people. Issues such as these aren't easy, especially for those surrounding the person. And I think it's really important, as you were saying earlier, Lauren, that we must look after ourselves in instances such as this. There's no point supporting somebody to the detriment of your own health. And I think that is something that we can really be at risk of, especially when you have no experience, as Lawrence was saying, like if you're coming to this brand new, you often don't know when you're giving too much or completely making yourself vulnerable as well. So what support networks are there out there for people who are carers, Lauren?
Well, there's lots of formal support if you're a carer, but that tends to be more not just for people who are looking after friends, but if you're looking after a relative, you can get help from the council, from the government. But in terms of on campus, you can get support from student advice if it's affecting your studies. You can get support from the counselling centre if it's affecting you personally. One other thing to remember as well is that we talked a little bit about confidentiality, but you can speak about your feelings, you can speak about things that are affecting you without talking about what's been disclosed to you by someone. So you can talk about how, oh, someone told me something and it's made me feel X, Y, and Z, and you can talk about your feelings and talk about ways to help those feelings without breaking confidentiality. What about you, Gareth? What did you find was helpful when you were supporting someone?
Within like my friendship group, there's, you know, it's a few people knew, so it was being able to speak to them about it as well, and a lot of them had more experience dealing with it than me, so they were able to kind of offer me advice and prop me up and make sure that I knew what I was doing and where I was going, and that, you know, when it was actually happening and when it happened several times, there was people there who knew that about like what was going on and knew, were able to point me in the right direction, because a lot of people just expected me to make the decisions, and I couldn't have done that without advice from my friends.
And was advice from friends enough, or did you seek any other support online or from any other services?
I went online to kind of look at more the official side of it, just so that I was more informed on the whole, but really it was just going to my friends and asking them for advice. Like I said, they had a lot more, they had a lot to give, and they had a lot of experiences between them, so it was quite, yes, it was a very good support network.
How about you, Lawrence? Similar?
Yeah, I think so. I think I also found, because sometimes it can be so dominating over a particular group. So I had a pretty similar experience that it was a group of people that knew in both situations. But sometimes you need to pull yourself out. And you need to pull yourself out with a different group who don't know, don't really want, like, they'd be fine, they'd be supportive and everything, but they're sort of a safe space to be like, oh, I don't have to have this in my mind, forefront of everything. Because sometimes it can just be at the forefront, and it can just be permanent, and it can just be something that you fit other things around, but it's what you're always thinking about. And so for me, in first year, there'd be like my degree friends, going out with people from work, like actually working in the library or, you know, at Pizza Hut. But that was my sort of, I mean, the danger is you're doing it for escapism, but as long as you know that you're not doing that, you know, as long as you hold that in mind that you're not doing that for that reason, I think it can be quite healthy.
And is there anything that in an ideal world you wish you'd been able to do, or that having gone through this you would offer as advice to anyone else who's supporting a friend?
I think I'd probably go earlier with, we'd have to go through this breaching the confidentiality question, sort of going into that into more depth. But I wish I'd told more people earlier. And I wish I'd told sort of people that can make a difference earlier, and not really worried about the sort of the consequences of it, and just dealt with them. I think that would be my thing.
Because I think it can be incredibly isolating if you're alone with all of this knowledge and feeling all this responsibility. And you can just feel like you're completely alone in this sea of feelings and fears. And I completely agree, just spreading that load a little bit can help so much. Have you got anything to add?
I just think it's important to kind of, it sounds quite harsh, but just to remove yourself sometimes, like similar to Lawrence, but literally just to spend time on your own. And just, if you know, if being able to say no, because as bad as it sounds, you do have to often obviously think about your own well-being as well. And I think just, yeah, removing yourself from the situation is probably the best.
I think it's quite important as well to allow yourself to get angry. I think in these situations we're so constantly worried about this other person that you want to make sure that you're just being the best support structure that you can. And actually, I mean, Mind Matters members maybe criticise me if I'm wrong, but sometimes it's okay to have a full-blown argument and shout and scream, because sometimes that relieves all of this tension that's just weighing you down. And I know in my situation, we always found that helped. But as yeah. you said earlier, that might just be quite telling of my character. I don't like that underlying tension, and sometimes it is quite nice to just get things out there.
I think on one level, there's you can sort of like infantilize them, like treat someone like a child because they've got this thing going on, but actually they're a fully rational adult that just has this thing going on, and that sometimes we can be like, oh, I've got to look after you. And so if you create that hierarchy in a friendship, the friendship can sometimes break down. And I know sometimes, like, if you're like, oh, I don't want to tell them this bad news because I don't know how they're going to react, or I don't want to tell them how I'm feeling because their feelings are so much more important. You can see how all these relationship dynamics sort of crop up that are really problematic, and most importantly, like, sort of ruin that friendship or ruin that relationship.
I think you do have to respect the independence and autonomy of the person that you're looking after. They're still an adult,
yeah.
You know, absolutely. And I think also respecting your own limitations. You are just a friend. You're not a mental health professional.
Yeah.
You don't have the same obligation to always be there, just as Gareth said. And also you don't necessarily have the skills and training to always offer the best advice. Did you ever feel that you were put in a very difficult situation where you had to make a decision, Gareth?
Yeah, like, there've been occasions when it's been like I've had people saying that, like, you might, like, this needs to happen, and people just presumed because I was, you know, the friend that was there, that I was the one who had to decide. But it was. But then, like, I saw how the person who was suffering at that point heard what was being said. And didn't take it very well, and it was trying to kind of make the decision between should I listen to them or should I listen to the person who's kind of whispering in my ear.
Yeah.
And often you find yourself making those decisions without the integral person being involved, don't you?
Yeah.
Especially if there's, like Lawrence was saying earlier, if there's a friendship group supporting one person, you often feel like you're like their parents making that decision, and that's not always the right way to go about things.
No.
What do you think about looking after yourself as well? When I was reading through the Mind website earlier, something that they mentioned that I hadn't really thought of was to look after yourself in terms of staying healthy, keeping up with your hobbies and interests, having lots of things to do, similar to the advice that you'd give to someone suffering from ill mental health. In that if all of those things in your life are okay, then you're going to be better equipped to help this person, and also it'll stop it feeling like it takes over everything. Would you two agree? Is there anything else that you'd like to add, or anything that you think is particularly good? Is salad the answer?
Never. I think it's obviously it is important to look after yourself because of the fact that if your own well-being is being compromised as a result, it's just going to get to the point where you physically can't support them anymore. And then what happens when they need you, when you're like, I just can't. I think, yeah, keep like, first, allowing yourself to kind of maintain your own well-being is, yeah, critical.
Are there any services that either of you two have come across that you think would be really valuable for someone who's supporting a friend to know about that you may not necessarily know about?
I think in terms of crisis care, I think Dial House would be the best one because this is something that I'm going to try in my last few months to try and push the university to create one here. For the university students, but basically it's a crisis care centre. If you know, picture a house that looks like the Hidden Cafe, and that's what it's sort of for, so that if someone does feel like they're in crisis, or they can be taken there and they'll be looked after, and you know that they're supported. I think in my first year I felt like crisis was something it seems ridiculous now, but it's something that you try to deal with as you guys rather than as a healthcare issue. So, like, if someone cracked their head open, you wouldn't hesitate calling an ambulance. But if someone's in crisis, you're like, okay, let's talk this out. And I don't know why. I don't know why that was the first reaction.
And Dial House is run by the Leeds Survivor-Led Crisis Service, and they also have a phone line that you can ring as well if you're in crisis. And Dial House is amazing. If you've got kids, they'll arrange childcare for you. If you live far away and you don't drive, they can arrange for a taxi. They are phenomenal. So, yeah, I think that's a really important service for people to have in mind. How about you, Gareth?
I don't really, I'm afraid.
There's also a mental health triage team that now work out of St James's Hospital. So if you ring up and you say there's someone who's in mental health distress, instead of sending an ambulance with paramedics, they can send this mental health triage team, which can be less intimidating. And instead of being taken to A&E during crisis, you'll be taken to mental health services, which can be a lot better, because in A&E they do sometimes just put you in a room and until you're calm, which is actually long term not necessarily that beneficial.
I think it's probably about time to move on to another song now. We've covered a lot of ground here on this discussion, and after this song we will be moving on to our Agony Aunt section of the programme. So if you do have a question that you want us to answer, then please get in touch with us on Twitter at ThisIsLSR, or, you know, just text Lauren. I mean, I think that's where most of our listener base comes from, if we're being quite honest. And we will be right back with you straight after this. This is Lila Vargan with This Is Love.
This is love. He comes with promises. He comes with promises. He comes with promises. That this is love. That this is love.
So it is time to talk to you about our Agony Aunt problem of the week. We actually have two for you this afternoon, and the first one is about being a bit drunk, isn't it? Lauren, would you like to give us a bit of a roundup of what this problem's about?
So our first question of the day reads, Dear Lauren and Lissy, my friend keeps opening up when she's really drunk and says some very worrying things, but she won't talk about it when she's sober and gets angry or shuts down the conversation if I try and ask her about it. What should I do? I really think she needs to talk about it, but she seems to only be able to do so when she's drunk. I think this is a position a lot of us has been in.
Yes, definitely.
Where friends have a lot of drunk feelings but refuse to acknowledge them in the light of day. Gareth, you're nodding away. Have you got some sage advice to offer?
I obviously, like, this has happened before, and it's I don't want to say be persistent, because sometimes that's not necessarily the best thing if they're just going to shut the conversation down. But I think it is, you've just got to make them aware that you're not doing it to, you know, to prize in and be like, I just want to be nosy. You're doing it because, like, you care. And, I mean, I don't want to go on the saying, but, like, a drunk heart is often, you know, there is some truth there. And I think it's trying to kind of, like, just convince them that it's all there. You're just trying to be, you know, positive help.
They do say drunk words, sober thoughts.
That's the one. That's
Lawrence,
the one.
Do you agree?
Well, I think in this situation, the most important thing is that ensuring that you have that relationship with someone. So it might be that I'm really drunk and I have a lot of feelings, which, like Lissy says, that's a normal situation boy. But if I don't have that relationship with someone, that's maybe why I don't want to tell them sober. But it might be that I really want to keep this, you know, repressed and whatever. But if I'm telling you drunk, it might be that if you just tell me, right, I'm here for you when you want to deal with this, we can deal with it. But if you don't, that's fine. You're giving them the agency, you're letting them know that you're there for them, but you're also not saying, I'll pursue you till the end of the earth and to get this out of you, because then that puts you in a weird situation. If it is really difficult situation, you've made it really a big thing to get it out of them, so then they'll expect you to be able to help them and put in the same effort to help them. And so I you know, set the expectation, say, if you want me to help, I can help. But if you don't, okay. And then next time you're drunk, they might be, you know, if there's something serious that they're saying, then, you know, maybe be persistent, as Gareth says, and really push it. But if it's just something that they could deal with for themselves, but you feel like you could help, maybe a bit of distance might help.
I think it's interesting what you said at the beginning, that it may not be just you that they're talking to. Yeah. If you don't normally have that kind of relationship, it could well be that they're already receiving some help for this, which I would hope to be the case. But dear Agony Aunt, writer inner person, if you are listening, I would say, I think I would agree with Lawrence. Give them some space, give them some time. But then also with Gareth as well, if it is something serious, don't be afraid to bring it up a few times and just say, you know, you mentioned this thing and it did worry me. I'm still here to talk if you want to talk. Lissy, do you have anything?
Well, I have a question, really, to play devil's advocate. What do we think about people? Is there a line? Somebody who is genuinely struggling and actually does need your help, regardless of whether they're sober or drunk, and somebody who is just putting it on as an attention thing. Do you think there's a line? Do you think there's are we able to make that that distinction?
I think that that would probably come from how well you know the person, because I definitely have a lot of friends that when drunk will start crying about burnt toast, about anything. Like, you think you just have to, you judge it for yourself, you know. And I think if a person is concerned enough, worried enough by what's being said to write in, I would think that at that point they probably judged that it is a situation. But obviously, yeah, not every drunken feeling is a very serious feeling.
I think for me as well, there's a point where if someone's attention seeking, give them the attention, because it might be that something deep down is bothering them that's different. So for example, there are people in, you know, we meet regularly who will be attention seeking for the sake of, you know, they're a bit insecure, but it might be something more. It might be something that's, and in the end, the cost of ignoring them or the cost of giving them that time might seem worth it if you give them some time. If this is something they're doing every time, you know, leave.
Don't get sassy in the studio.
don't be that person if they're doing it all the time. But if it's this one thing that they are attention seeking about, then I don't know.
Do you think there's a right place to be giving advice when drunk? Because I imagine if your friend is drunk, then it could be that you've had a couple as well. Do you think you should be giving advice, Gareth? Do you think there's a place for us to be giving words of wisdom when we're drunk as well?
I don't, like, obviously you have to judge for, like, what kind of the situation yourself, because often what is the case is they have managed to get a lot, like, drunker than you, and it's trying to judge. But as well, like, removing it from, you know, so if they start having these feelings in the middle of a club, removing it from there, not necessarily offering them advice, but just being there for them, because it's not a productive environment otherwise. But yeah, maybe I wouldn't advise trying to give advice when you're drunk, because often it's not necessarily, you might say something that you don't mean, or like we said about getting angry earlier, that might boil over whilst you're drunk as well.
I agree. I think listening and support, fantastic when drunk. Advice may be better in the light of day. And I also have a bit of a rule on nights out. If someone is, say, they've broken up with someone and they're upset about this every time that they're drunk, I'll be like, okay, you get 15 minutes. Get 15 minutes to vent and to cry, and you're going to shout and scream and get it all out, but then we are going to have a great night and we're going back in. Because I think, when you're drunk, I know this sounds harsh, it does sound very harsh, but when you're drunk, you can't see the light at the end of the tunnel. Yeah, when you get a thought in your head, it gets stuck on repeat, and you will just go round and round in a spiral all night.
I have a question.
Yes, Lawrence.
Do you have a separate 15 minutes during pre-drink? or is there no division? There is just 15 minutes during the night.
Well, I mean, I'm talking about obviously not a crisis situation. Someone who just, you know, that same ex gets brought up every time, or
likes a moan. Yeah, we all have them.
And so in that time, I think it's really important to listen to your friend, to be like, your feelings are valid, but also, you know, come on, let's. I think you can. I mean, you can judge for yourself. It is something serious, then this is not good advice for that. But if someone is just going round and round the same things, just be like, okay, come on, off we go now. It's time for Beyonce. It's always time for Beyonce, in my opinion. Hi guys, you're listening to Brainwave on LSR. We've been talking today about supporting friends when they're going through difficult times, and we're just about to have a little look at our second agony aunt question of the day. So the second question we've received reads, and I'm just going to give a little content warning for self-harm and suicide. For the next 5 minutes, we'll be discussing this if you want to tune out and tune back in. So the question reads, Dear Lauren and Lissy, my flatmate keeps saying that he wants to die and there's no point going on, and I've noticed what looks like self-harm marks on his arm. I've tried to talk to him about it, but he says it's nothing. However, I'm becoming more and more concerned he's going to really hurt himself. What can I do to help him? So this is a really, really difficult question, and something that I hope that not many of us would find ourselves in this situation, but I know that it does happen surprisingly often. Gareth, Lawrence, have you got anything to offer?
So I think for me, you need to make sure that everyone else in the house is operating as a unit. Like, no one's necessarily feeling like this is their responsibility as an individual, like, because sometimes those group dynamics that we have as friends, there's a leader, there's a follow, you know, those things in these situations become really difficult to manage. I think the most important thing is to find professional help, because you can't diagnose these things as effectively. You don't know what the danger signs are. We can intuitively guess, but to know that we're guessing shows where we are in this situation. I think as well, the stuff that we've talked about all show has been about practicing kindness to yourself and using, learning how to judge situations effectively and then judging them effectively. And that's easy to say, impossible to do every time. And so, you know, huge sympathy for this situation. I've, you know, been there in that situation. And all you can do is to be the best that you feel you can be in that situation. You need to get professional help and support. And we're quite lucky at the university that we do have quite, and especially in Leeds, that we do have support you can rely on.
Where would you recommend going in Leeds or on campus for some support?
So there's Jeanette Hannah, the mental health advisory team. She leads the mental health advisory team. She does brilliant work all day, every day. And she, if you're in halls, you know, the security staff are advised to get Jeanette to, you know, liaise the support. If you're out in halls or anything like that, there's, no, sorry, if you're out in houses and things like that, there's liaison and diversion service that you mentioned. There's, you know, we also forget that the NHS play a huge role in this. Like, we always mention them last. But if it's crisis, actually, learning and recognising what the NHS can do for you is the best thing that you can do. So, for example, you talked about that you don't have to call an ambulance and you don't have to take someone to A&E, because actually, sometimes if you're in crisis, and especially in terms of suicide, it's an incredibly difficult place to be. And so the main point I would say is that deal with the crisis situation and make sure that the non-crisis situation is also dealt with. There is something that is driving these things going on, and actually those need to be dealt with too. And it's not to say that this is this person's responsibility, but just everyone in this situation, everyone that's got a responsibility, that includes the NHS, includes university, includes the housemates, it includes family, they just all need to pull together to make this hard situation less hard.
And what do you think, Gareth? Have you got anything to add?
No, I think like everything Laurence has said is the guts there. That's the important side. The side is seeking professional help.
Yeah, and particularly going from what Laurence said about responsibility. Whilst, you know, we all want to look after our friends, I would say that I don't think necessarily it is your responsibility as a friend to ensure that your friend's mental health problems are solved. You are not a mental health professional. But I think particularly in the case of this question where the friend in question doesn't think that there is a problem, I would advise them to go and seek some professional help, because that when you're, it sounds like this person is on the very first step of the journey and you are not necessarily going to be the best person to lead them down it all the way. But as we're coming to the end of the show, I'm just going to round up with some of my links and support services that you can go to, both in response to the Agony Aunt and generally if you need any help. So today on the show, we've been talking a lot about support for you if you're caring for someone, and we found a lot of that online. Lots of charities like Mind, Rethink and Young Minds, but Mind in particular, have fantastic online resources about supporting people and yourself with mental health problems. We've also mentioned Dial House. If you Google Leeds Survivor-Led Crisis Service, you can find out about Dial House, which is a crisis service, and their crisis phone line, where and they can look after you in crisis, by which we mean when you just feel like you cannot go on, and they can keep you safe. There's also support on campus, as we mentioned, Jeanette Hannah, based in Disability Services in the Chemistry Building, and also as ever, the My Matters services, which is a welfare hour Mondays of term time at 5:30, peer-led support group Tuesdays of term time at 5:30, and an eating disorders support group at 7 o'clock on Monday of term time, all in the little LUU house. You can also email us. Our email address is unimms@leeds.ac.uk, and you can also get in touch with us here at Brainwave with an Agony Aunt topic for well, it'll be after Easter holidays now, you can tweet us at This Is LSR, or you can send us an email to info@lsrfm.com with Brainwave as the subject heading. So we will see you after Easter now. I hope that you all stay safe over the Easter holidays and look after yourself, because it can be so difficult leaving behind all the support networks that you've built up in Leeds to go home. So I hope that you all care for yourselves, be kind to yourselves, have a lovely time at home, and we will see you after the holidays for more Brainwave. Thank you, Gareth. Thank you, Lawrence. That's and thank right. you, Lissy.
You're very welcome.
And yeah, have a lovely break.
Yeah, we'll see you in April. Bye-bye.